Good afternoon, and sorry for the delay in the change of rooms and all that stuff as we get going here on our legislative process. The Government Operations and Veterans Affairs Committee, so hopefully you're in the right room. We had some people that were downstairs, including a couple of my interns, so now everybody's set. We have our first bill before us is House File Number 1741. Representative Lencheski, welcome to the committee, a former committee member here. Do you want to go ahead? I'll move 1741, and there is a fiscal note, so it has to go to State Government Finance. So with that, I'll move the bill and get it in order, and here we go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I want to thank Representative Segrin, first of all, for leaving her committee to be here as well, and I think it's significant that we bipartisanly are united in this bill, as is our whole delegation. And we appreciate you taking the time today to hear Bloomington's concerns about a potential for a casino to be placed at the Mall of America. Mr. Chair, I want to thank you because you have always been fair, and you kept your word and gave me this hearing, so I do appreciate that. Just a couple comments about this bill. This bill says that if you're going to build a casino in the state of Minnesota, you have to have local control. You have to have local voter approval. And it sets forth the process to do that. It's not site-specific. It would follow any, it would happen in any city in the state that would have a casino. And what it would give you as a legislator, if you are the district who's looking at potentially being handed a casino by the state of Minnesota, is one of those gifts that keep on giving, that you would allow, your voters could make a determination whether or not they would like to do that. Just a little background, and you're being handed out some handouts. I just want to quickly tell you that Bloomington's perspective on the issue of a casino in Bloomington is that Bloomington taxpayers have been the venture capitalists who have prepared this site. If you look up on the screen, you can see what Bloomington's plan for the proposed casino site is. This is Bloomington's plan. Little history. When Bloomington decided to get involved with the Mall of America Phase 1, it put forth all kinds of local money, no state money, local money, and you can see that in the Appendix B handout, $108 million were paid for by Bloomington taxpayers, not the state of Minnesota, to develop the parcel. And what's not mentioned here is, most importantly, is Bloomington taxpayers backed a general obligation bond, not a revenue bond, a general obligation bond of $80 million to prepare the site. Now, had the Mall of America gone under, the only person on the hook, the only people on the hook would have been the city of Bloomington and its taxpayers. The state would not have lost a cent. We took all the risk, and now that the reward is coming to fruition, there are people who want to step in and take, you know, basically the rewards of the labors of the people of Bloomington. So we're asking you to let us keep our local control. The site for the proposed casino in at the Mall of America, and there will be those who say it's not about the Mall of America, but I can show you that the legislation reads that it has to be by an international airport, and the background material for those proposals include all kinds of projections about very specific to the Mall of America site. So it is about Bloomington. In that site that we're looking at now for a possible casino, or some legislators are, in that same handout you can see that Bloomington taxpayers have already put $19 million into that site. We anticipate we're going to put more. So I would ask you, I would appeal to your economic sense of justice that when a community puts its money into creating a prime real estate piece of land that didn't exist prior, that it now be able then to develop it. I called nonpartisan research staff today and asked a number of them if they could look and give me an example where this has happened in the state of Minnesota's history, and they could not. We have people in this legislature who fight to get a jail, who fight for a college, who fight for a highway. We don't have the legislature make cities take stuff they don't want. And this is a bill about local control. Representative Segrin's going to talk to you, and then also we have Clark Arneson, who I just want you to know who he is. He was the head project manager for the Mall of America. He understands what has gone into this probably more than anybody in the state. He has now just completed the project. He's been the project manager for IKEA, and we welcome you this summer to IKEA. He is our project manager, City of Bloomington employee, for Phase 2 of the Mall. He can explain the development contract we have with the Mall of America for that site. So, Mr. Chair, if you'd like to take Representative Segrin's testimony or take...
Sounds good to me. That's fine.
Mr. Chair, I'd prefer that Mr. Arneson go ahead and explain the development that is slated for this area first before I make my comments.
Mr. Arneson, welcome to our committee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, committee members. I'm Clark Arneson. I'm Manager of Planning and Development for the City of Bloomington. I've worked on the Mall of America project since 1987, and there is a formal contract between the City of Bloomington, Bloomington Port Authority, which I'm also the administrator of, and Mall of America Company that provides for the development of Mall of America Phase 1 and Mall of America Phase 2. So there's a very specific contract that says what the city will deliver and also then what the Mall of America Company will deliver. The rendering that is on the screen is a plan for Mall of America Phase 2. This was approved by the Bloomington City Council last May. What you're seeing in the background are the taller buildings are three hotels. In the center is a retail restaurant entertainment venue. And on the left is the IKEA development. The second graphic that is now up on the screen, the lower portion is Mall of America, the Skyway across Lindau Avenue, and you can see the center entertainment retail core, the hotel office up on the fringe, and another hotel, and then the IKEA development in this area.
What is the IKEA development? Why don't you just tell us what that is?
Mr. Chairman, that is a 336,000 square foot retail store by the Swedish retailer IKEA. The building is under construction. It will be open approximately July 1st of this year.
So it's like just a huge retail complex?
Yes, sir.
And all, just out of curiosity, what do they sell?
Mr. Chairman, it is a furniture and house furnishing store.
Really?
Otherwise, you drive to Chicago, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, okay. That's where their headquarters are.
You would drive to Chicago.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman,
even for you to drive up to Grand Rapids to buy your
furniture.
Kabovi.
Another one.
Mr. Chairman, their nearest store is in Chicago. Their headquarters is in Stockholm, Sweden.
Okay.
That is the piece that is under construction right now. The balance of the site will be developed in phases by multiple developers, unlike the first phase of the mall that was built all at once. So we will continue to review and develop the balance of the site as time goes by.
Very good.
Mr. Chairman, a question is, is the Skyway part of the IKEA development now?
Mr. Chairman, committee member Silver, the Skyway is a requirement that it be developed, but not until there are further phases of the development, so there's something to connect to, but it is a requirement.
Okay. Representative Segrin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. When this proposal came about, Representative Boudreaux came to me this summer and alerted to me very kindly that she was considering doing this, and she mentioned that she would like to, develop a casino at the Mall of America site. My reaction to it was, please, Bloomington is not seeking a casino. We have plans for this site that have been worked on for many, many years, many phases, a lot of development and developers interested, water park complex, many things that are already in development, and really did not feel that we wanted a casino in Bloomington. Years ago, when the Mall of America was first proposed and finally developed, the idea for the whole concept was to create a family-friendly venue, and indeed that is what has happened. We have Camp Snoopy there, and millions of people come there. It's one of the second largest, and it's amazing. It's one of the second or third largest attractions in the nation, about 39 million visitors. I think it's second only to Disney World in the attraction. It's a wonderful place to take your family, and the city council at that time wanted it to be developed that way. We believe that, and as Representative Lencheski said, bipartisanly, the legislators that represent this area feel that it would not be in keeping with what we want for our community. A casino does bring with it much more adult entertainment. It also brings a lot of societal public safety issues that we are concerned about. We just really feel that it is not appropriate for our community. Some folks would are very interested in developing a casino in their community, and that's fine. But we just ask that the state not interject their will upon a community if they do not want it. And so the bill before you is to say that if this would happen, that the city itself, the citizens that live there, would at least have a say in whether they want to have this and take on all the public safety issues. And actually, I think, change the character of our community in a much more negative way. Those are my comments. We just ask that you allow our community to do this if there would be this decision to make it. We feel that there's been so much money put into other infrastructure and development. We have other things that we would like to do in this on this area, and we just feel like it is really not a very positive thing for the legislature to insert themselves into a local community.
Very good. Any questions of the author? Representative Lippman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representatives Lemcheski and Segrin. Just two quick questions. I like the thrust of your bill and likely to vote for it. On line 18, it says the facility's presence. I'm just wondering whether, if it were a previously developed site, whether it would be easier or a way to avoid 1741 if it were enacted, if you were to put a casino in an existing building, because presumably the facility's presence had already been approved. I'm just wondering, as you move along to state government finance, whether you and your supporters and your team of lawyers might look at that use as opposed to the facility's presence. I'm not going to offer that today, but I think that's what you're getting at, which is the particular gaming use and not the facility's presence. So I would urge you just to think about that as you go forward. On line 25, though, my question is, if Commissioner Ingeson were to run into a dispute with the city clerk as to what election costs are recoverable under this section, what would happen? They're at loggerheads. They don't agree. The city clerk says you got to pay for election judges. Commissioner Ingeson says go jump in one of the many fine lakes in Bloomington. what happens?
Representative Stephen. Mr. Chair and Representative Lippman, I can't foresee that would happen. I think that, you know, there's usually a certain standard procedure for elections. You have to have election judges. You have to have certain things. And I would think that it would be pretty much the same typical type of voting process that and cost that would always take place. I would not see that our city would be getting into a dispute over that, and I would also think that our city runs a very fine election process. I would think that they would probably work very amicably with
Mr. Chairman, Representative Segrin, just briefly, well, you know, I think we legislate for the lowest common denominators. You move to state government finance, I would urge you to set out the costs that you think you would like to recover. I'd glad to help you pen something if you were interested, but I think that would add clarity and improve your bill. So that people knew exactly what to submit and is likely to reduce conflict. Not to say that Commissioner Ingeson is unreasonable, but with this kind of language, I think it's a font for tension. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Okay, Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, maybe to counsel, have we ever state pay for local elections like this?
Mr. Shepard.
Local election period enable the state for that?
Mr. Chair, members, not to the best of my knowledge, but I'm not all that familiar with local laws, so I could be missing something.
Mr. Chairman, to the authors, can you give me a reason why that's in here, other than we impose it and as a condition, but if you build the state back, it seems to me that that's a local election which should be paid for by local resources.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lemcheski.
Thank you, Chairman Rhodes and Representative Solberg for the question, and also thank you, Representative Lippman, for your advice, and I think those were good points that you made. I'll tell you, this morning, Representative Seeger and I were still debating if we ought to make Bloomington pay or the state, and that's really not, I don't want to get hung up on that. We're open on that. The reason is, I think that we thought the state should pay was on principle. The state is going to assert itself. Let's say that the state says we are going to stick a, I'm trying to think of something huge, but I can't come up with anything as big as a casino. But let's say we'll take
a
small.
How about a Finn Stadium?
Well, And you know, they require local referendums. And the governor has said, let's have a local referendum. So that's a great point.
But who pays for that, Mr.
The host community. And, you know, Representative Solberg, I'd be willing to do it that way. I guess it was in principle, I thought if the legislature decided to put a great land target store in Representative Boudreaux's district, because this is a private thing, it's not a public casino, it's a private casino, if they didn't want it, I guess it seems unfair they should have to pay for the election. But, you know, I'd be willing to change that. You know, we certainly, the fiscal note is probably going to be about $20,000. So that if that's the sticking point on this bill, we can change that. I think Bloomington voters just want to have a say.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Silver.
I don't know if it's a sticking point on the cost so much as it is on the principle of the state paying probably for the first time for a truly local referendum. And I can understand the argument that we're imposing it, but we impose an awful lot of things on local units of government as well.
Would this be like a funded mandate?
Well, if it would be, it'd be the first. I don't want to ruin their bill because I think it's a decent bill, but I would hope that they would really consider taking that section off.
Boudreaux.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since my name keeps getting mentioned here, I feel almost as though this bill is designed for me for some reason. I just want to remind members, you know, whether it would be proposed, a gaming facility would be proposed in any locality, it's going to be applicable to that locality. This isn't just about Bloomington. This is about the whole state of Minnesota. And to require that the state pay for a referendum that the city wants to do, I mean, I find that problematic. I'm not going to give direction to those carrying the bill, but I feel as though there are, first of all, there are other proposals out there. There are other discussions that will take place. I question why we have excluded racetracks. Maybe there must be some good reason for that, but I mean, if it's truly something that the community needs to weigh in on by a referendum, this seems kind of exclusively designed in regard to a gaming facility. I don't understand that.
Representative Lanchowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Boudreaux. It is exclusively designed because we are being, in fact, we have, did you know that in Bloomington right now there are people going door to door trying to get lawn signs in Bloomington that say, you know, I'm basically for a casino in Bloomington. We have signs going up in Bloomington that promote Representative Boudreaux's bill. So it is very intentional. The signs say an A-plus idea, stars. And they're taking place in Bloomington right now. There is a lobbying effort underway. We don't know who's doing it or financing it, but the same signs that were part of the press conference for the casino bill are in people's yards now. And, you know, if it's the will of this committee to say that the city of Bloomington should pay for the election, that'd be fine. And if we need to add racetracks, that'd be fine. But Representative Seeger and I wouldn't be here if there wasn't a proposal of this magnitude designed for our community. This bill would not be here if it weren't for that proposal.
Representative Solberg.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would just like to probably then move to delete subdivision 3 for the cost. Maybe that makes it the bill easier to track as well. It doesn't have to go to a finance committee for ways and means.
Okay, the motion is to remove subdivision 3, which is basically the cost paid by the state.
And amend the title accordingly.
And amend the title accordingly.
And Mr. Chairman, I don't do that to knock any particular city, but I do think it is a precedent-setting type of cost that the state would be doing.
Chair?
Representative Lanchowski, how do you feel about the amendment? Representative Seeger?
I think we think that'd be fine. And okay. Mr. Chair, then also would this bill then be ready to go right to the general register?
Certainly would be, because there's no finance needed. Yep. It'd be strictly policy. On the amendment, any questions? Comments? Representative Knobloch? No?
I'd speak in support, Mr. Chair.
Okay. You just don't want anything going to Ways and Means, right?
Busy enough the way it is, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. With that said, all in favor, everybody understands the amendment. With all in favor of that amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment's adopted. We now have the bill before us. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill? Seeing no one else, anybody else have any comments? Representative Lippman.
Well, Mr. Chairman, could I, under the 24-second rule, move that on line 18, the facility's presence be deleted and that use be inserted, if we're going right to the floor.
Representative Lencheski. Or Representative Segrin.
Representative Segrin and I would both like to do this. Thank you.
So you want to move to...
On line 18, delete the words, the facility's presence, and insert that use.
Any questions on that? And the authors are okay with it, correct? All in favor of the Lippman oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's passed. Pretty soon we're going to have a nothing bill except the number. Any other questions? Nobody from the audience? If not, I'll renew my motion that House File 1741 be recommended passed to the General Register.
Recommended.
As amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? It passes. You're on your way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Representative Broad, House File 1977. Welcome to our committee. I'll move House File 1977, and it goes to Health and Human Services Finance, correct? Okay. Why don't you go ahead and explain your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1977 essentially makes a one-time transfer from the Lottery Prize Fund to a group called the North Star Alliance for Problem Gambling. This is a $75,000 transfer, and what's interesting about it is not just giving away free money, it's also requiring a match in private contribution. So we're going to be leveraging some state money with some private contribution, which is a good thing. I do have with me some people here today from the Alliance, and I just wanted to have them touch on what the Alliance actually does in regards to problem gambling, education, and things like that. One of the things that intrigues me about the Alliance is the group of people that are at the table together in regards to problem gambling. We have all sorts of gaming interests at the table together, which proves to be a good benefit for this group. So I do have Reverend Lance Holthusen with me here today, who is the Executive Director of the North Star Alliance.
Hi, welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself for the tape, and you're on TV, by the way. And go ahead and we'll hear what you have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Broad. My name is Lance Holthusen. I'm the Executive Director of the North Star Problem Gambling Alliance. Very pleased to have the opportunity to talk to you about the organization and our request for funding. I have two people with me who are also prepared to respond, make comments and respond to questions. Don Feeney, who is Director of Research and Planning for the Minnesota State Lottery, and Marjorie Rapp, who is an attorney and the principal of the Bridgeport Family Law Center located in St. Paul, both of whom are board members. The North Star Problem Gambling Alliance is a gambling-neutral private nonprofit entity. The unique thing that is about our organization is that we represent all of the gambling venues, the gaming venues in the state of Minnesota, as well as other stakeholders such as the financial services industry, the bar, judicial services, treatment providers, residential providers, as well as gatekeepers, those people who are involved with providing residential counseling, clergy, school counselors, probation officers. You have some information about our organization in front of you. I'd like to call on Marjorie Rapp. to talk just a little bit about one of the projects that we're involved with and make a comment from her perspective as a board member.
Hi, welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself.
Good afternoon, Chair. And I am Marjorie Rapp. I'm the owner of Bridgeport Law Center, and I practice in the area of family law and criminal defense, and I'm a member of the North Star Gambling Alliance. And my interest in this is very personal and professional, as I think there's two questions that have not been answered by our Minnesota judicial system, and that is, what is the impact of gambling on our judicial system, and what should we be doing about it? I believe that the answers to these questions are crucial to addressing the needs of our families and our communities, and the families being your own families, your neighbors, friends, and relatives. I think we've all been affected by at least one person who is suffering from addiction. My experience as a past chair of Lawyers Concerned for Lawyers, which is a nonprofit organization that helps attorneys who are suffering from gambling, alcohol, depression, mental illness, and my experience as an attorney practicing in the area of family law and criminal defense, is that at least, and I can honestly say 90% of the people I come across and talk to every day are before me because of issues with chemical dependency, gambling, and other co-related, co-occurring disorders, such as depression and other mental health disorders. The result of these issues not being addressed is that our calendars in the court system, as many of you probably know, are being driven by these issues. And the sad result is that we're going to see more suicide, more depression, more divorce, more child abuse and neglect if these issues are not identified and dealt with. Our board and our members here are creating a task force with members from the judicial bench, the legal profession, and clients to research just what the possibility of a gambling court, to begin the steps to creating a gambling court, such as the drug court that is now operating here in Ramsey County in both our juvenile court system and our adult court system. And my experience tells me that many of our judicial officers, our probation officers, our attorneys, the attorneys that I practice with every day are not educated, do not understand the issue of addiction, and therefore the issues don't get addressed, people don't get resourced, don't get the help that we want. So we're asking for your support so that we can continue to educate, research, and address these issues that are before and affect all of us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we also have Don Feeney from the Minnesota Lottery, and also who is a board member of the Alliance.
Thank you very much for coming.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Don Feeney. I am the Research and Planning Director of the Minnesota State Lottery. I am also on the board of the North Star Problem Gambling Alliance, as well as the board of the National Council on Problem Gambling. Other items I think that need to be mentioned regarding this organization. First, the North Star Problem Gambling Alliance is the Minnesota affiliate of the National Council on Problem Gambling. Prior to the Alliance's establishment, Minnesota for some time had not been represented on the National Council and had no access to national resources in this area. I think it's remarkable the degree to which the Alliance has brought together such a wide array of people to work in this issue. If you look at the newsletter that we have in front of you on the next to last page, you'll see a list of the board of directors. You can see the range of people that are included in that. A number of these people are university researchers who have national, international reputations in this area, treatment providers whose centers are renowned, again, throughout the world, as well as people from all of the sectors of the gaming industry. I haven't had my hands on close-up like this since I did the Daily 3 drawings.
Well, we see how calm you are, though. You're not
the question has been raised regarding the Alliance to the extent that to what extent is this going to duplicate the services that are being offered through the State Department of Human Services. The Department of Human Services emphasizes the provision of treatment, and that is not an area in which we will be involved in at all. They do a very good job of making sure that treatment is accessible to people. They operate the problem gambling helpline. We see no need to duplicate that service. They've been doing some public service announcements, posters, TV, and radio commercials. Because they are doing that, we will not seek to duplicate that. What we are trying to do is educate the general public, and in particular, what we call the gatekeepers, people who are on the first line of defense against problem gambling, so that they recognize it when they see it, they know what resources are available, and they're able to deal with people, preferably before it comes to a crisis stage. People such as bankers, people such as doctors, people such as ministers, and there are no programs currently that are directed towards those people. That is a need which we see that we're going to fill. The Department of Human Services for several years ran a statewide conference on problem gambling. 2 years ago, they dropped that conference. We have picked it up. We're now about to, next week, we'll operate our second statewide conference educating people on problem gambling. The department, several years ago, stopped issuing a newsletter about problem gambling issues. Again, we have picked it up. Our goal is to supplement what the department offers, not to in any way duplicate or compete. I should mention, too, that Acting Director Vekic of the Lottery is aware of this legislation and is very much in support of that. And with that, I think any of us would be pleased to take your questions.
Any questions for Representative Lippman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Broad, I joined as a co-author today. I'm pleased to be part of this legislation. I like the thrust of what you're doing. My one concern on lines 10 and 11 with regards to the first of the three tasks that you hope to do is provide services to increase public awareness of problem gaming or gambling. And while I think that's a noble pursuit, I think it's probably too broadly defined. You could probably spend many times $75,000 on just advertising generally. I'm just wondering whether you're open to a small amendment, which would be instead of problem gambling, insert treatment options, because clearly if you were to advertise about the availability of treatment options, that might be a help. I'm concerned that if you were to spend your time just talking about problem gaming, we would swallow that money. There'd be very little left over for education and training, very little left over for needed research. I guess what is your reply, if any, about narrowing the focus of your public awareness campaign?
Representative Broad?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to actually allow Mr. Feeney to discuss his perspective on that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lippman, I understand what you're saying there, and there are any number of things that could easily swallow this money, and I think that we certainly need to prioritize. But I think that something we need to do with regard to the gatekeepers that I mentioned is to make them aware of options that fall short of admitting somebody to a treatment program. Most of the people who have a gambling problem never go to treatment. For various reasons, they will not go to treatment. They may not need any kind of intensive treatment program, but we do want to make sure that they have access to materials, that maybe they could read materials, do a workbook, that sort of thing, that so that they don't have to get to that treatment expensive treatment stage. I understand your intent on that, but I would rather not preclude the other sorts of education options, and I think we certainly recognize that we have a limited budget to work within, and within the resources we have available to us can prioritize that as best as we can.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, Representative Broad and Mr. Ian, thank you for that. I guess I still have a concern about awareness as this bill makes its way to Health and Human Services Finance. I'll try to pen some other nomenclature which gets to the advocacy that you'd like to do, but I don't think is as broad as just talking about gambling or problem gaming generally. I think that there's a midpoint between those two, and some clever wordsmithing could achieve that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ellison?
Representative Broad, or actually probably one of your testifiers, my analyst. Of what percentage of gamblers are addicted gamblers?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ellison, the prevalence studies that have been done nationally have shown that, depending on the instrument used, the way the study is done and so on, anywhere between 0.1% and slightly over 1% of the adult population in the country meeting the clinical definition for a gambling addiction. That's not a trivial number. It's less common than drugs or alcohol, but more common than some of the other behavioral addictions we see.
Mr. Chair, do you have any information, those studies that you reviewed, on the economic impact of addicted gamblers? I mean, how much do they cost the economy? Do they have a higher incident of bankruptcy? I mean, I know it's a serious problem, but I guess I'm trying to get a clearer sense of the quantity of the problem.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Ellison, there are not any really terribly good studies of the economic impact of problem gambling. Probably the best work I've seen was done by the National Gambling Impact Study Commission about 4 years ago. I worked with the University of Chicago group who put a price tag on problem gambling, and I'm hoping I remember this correctly, nationally at $5 billion a year, which is several orders of magnitude smaller than the cost of both drug addiction and certainly alcohol, as well as some other disorders such as eating disorders, but more than others. Not as serious as some, but certainly significant.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question to any one of the panel members. Insofar as the matching funds are concerned, what groups or entities, if any, do you have reason to believe that will, in fact, contribute to the matching fund?
Sir?
Mr. Chair and Representative Jacobson?
Newman.
Pardon
close
me.
Enough.
I'm sorry. Pardon me.
He's the one without the beard.
the matching funds would come from non-governmental sources, and we would approach a variety of people in that area. We foundations, some of the gambling venues. In fact, all of the gambling venues would be given an opportunity to participate in this, and private individuals. So it would be a variety of people. One of the things that we hope to do is to give motivation for some of those entities that have not yet invested in looking at problem gaming issues to do so. We know that there are concerned people, and we think that this would be good, compelling reason for them to be involved.
Mr. Chairman, if I might follow up on that. Funding that the organization has already received includes, last year we received a startup grant from the Bremer Foundation. The conference that I mentioned earlier is being funded by the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association. We have received very generous grants from Canterbury Park. And I think what we do with the matching funds is grant more legitimacy and make it easier for some of these other organizations to contribute. I have absolutely no doubt that support will be forthcoming.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was just answered.
Okay, Representative Boudreau.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question to one of the witnesses in regard to the efficacy of the treatment and the dollars that have been invested. Do you have a percent of how many of those who have sought treatment have actually been effective, have had a means of recovery from the treatment, whether it was effective? Whoever would like to.
Mr. Chair, Representative Boudreau. Thanks for the question. That is a real important area that we hope to address, and that is the area of research. The specific question you ask, it depends on who is doing the research and who's paying for the research as to the effectiveness of the treatment. If it and you can well understand that response, I'm sure. One of the things that is sorely lacking in that area, the area of treatment, as well as in the area of general information, is good research. How many times has this committee heard conflicting reports on the severity of problem gambling, the number of addicted gamblers, the percentage of the population that has difficulty with it. You've heard things all over the map. One of the things that we would like to do, and that for one reason or another has not been done through the Department of Human Services, is research, good research to answer that question. Some of the research that needs to be done is in regard to the effectiveness of treatment. One other comment about research and why we don't have some of the adequate research. This is a very, very new area in the whole area of mental illness and excessive behaviors. Certainly, we've been gambling ever since we've been on been in existence. But the level of research, in terms of its frequency and seriousness, is about a decade old in comparison to research in the area of drugs and alcohol, where we have close to a century of good research. So we're playing catch-up, and that underscores the need for research in terms of the treatment. We don't have the 60 to 80 years of serious treatment for problem gambling or compulsive gambling research. And that's one of the things we want to do. So I appreciate your question, Representative Boudreau, and that's something we want to look at.
Representative Boudreau.
Thank you very much. I think it is important to track the efficacy of the programs that we invest in, and we do invest in a lot of programs in our state, not just for gambling, but for chemical dependency, and it's very important to track the efficacy of those programs, because we want to utilize the programs that deliver and do provide the best results. And that is what I'd want to mention about the language before us is, I think it would be helpful if we included the research from Dr. Kim. You have in your brochure, and not to mention Dr. Kim by name in the language, but we certainly have heard the testimony of people who have tried many, many gambling addictive programs to try to correct their behavior and not had much luck. But once they hooked into Dr. Kim's treatment, which is fairly new, it's still in the research stages, they were able to find to be cured, and not just in gambling, but I mean also he has treated other areas of compulsive disorders. And so, members of the committee, I would like to propose an amendment that would simply include, under the research category, and I think you have it before you, I want to include effective research, and I want the committee to weigh in on this proposal, because I think just by including research conducted at the University of Minnesota Medical School on compulsive gambling would assure us that when we're training people to treat those afflicted with compulsive gambling disorders, that we train them to look at all options of treatment, and particularly those that are effective. And so I ask members to consider this amendment at this time. Mr. Chairman, it's before you and handwritten.
Everybody has a copy?
I don't know if Representative Broad does.
We do. We would accept that amendment.
You accept it?
As friendly.
Any comments on the amendment? If not, all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment's adopted. On the bill. Any other questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Rhodes. Mr. Feeney, the Minnesota Lottery funds the Department of Human Services Compulsive Gambling Treatment Program. How effective is that program in your estimation?
Mr. Feeney. Chairman, Representative Erickson, Department of Human Services, through their program, is treating, I don't want to get the number wrong, so I'm kind of hesitant to state it, but in excess of 1,000 individuals a year at one of the states. Used to be six, we now have close to 80 licensed treatment programs in the state. They operate the Problem Gambling Helpline, which takes many thousands of calls a year, both from people seeking services and from people just seeking information. That is an excellent resource. Some of the public awareness programs that they have done, the public service announcements that they are airing right now, although I don't know how much airing they've gotten, are excellent. I think within the confines of the appropriations that they have and within the confines of what a state agency can do, and I think there are things that a nonprofit group can do that a state agency can't, have done an excellent job.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Feeney, do you know what the efficacy of that program is? Do you know if there has been any study to show how effective it is and how many recovering addicts we have?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, that they did, the last time that they did an evaluation of their treatment programs was in 1996 or 1997. They did show that the treatment was, by and large, effective. I don't remember the numbers. I will get you a copy of that study. The National Academy of Sciences did a study several years ago at the behest of Congress about and on problem gambling. They brought in everybody that they could think of to testify on the effectiveness of gambling treatment. The best conclusion that they could come to is some treatment is better than no treatment, but that's as specific as they could get.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Feeney, will the lottery be putting any money in this nonprofit?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, you mean in addition to what is called for in this bill?
Correct.
We are a we pay membership dues.
Okay.
Beyond that, we don't feel that that's within our purview.
Okay. And one last question, Mr. Chair. To what extent will the tribes and their casino operations contribute? I guess, Representative Broad, could you answer that? To what extent will they be a part of this? And do we know how much they already contribute to a variety of compulsive gambling recovering programs?
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that they would pay membership dues as well, but I'll let Lance Holthusen, who directs that, answer that question.
Sir?
Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson, there are a number of the tribal communities that are members of our organization. All are in terms of making contributions at various levels. To what extent they will this will increase their contributions, we don't know. One of the things that we're hoping to be able to do is to create a compelling argument for greater involvement. Mm-hmm. We've been very pleased with the beginning support that we have gotten, and we have no reason to anticipate anything other than that that will increase. But we hope that it's a an opportunity for all of the gambling venues to participate.
Mr. Chair, I do have one last question. Do any of you know where we have the most addiction? Do we have it in charitable gambling? Do we have it in purchase of lottery tickets? Or do we have it with video slots and what can happen at a casino?
Mr. Feeney?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, I'm going back again to the study that it was done by the University of Minnesota in 1996. They did ask people who were presenting for treatment what their preferred form of gambling was. And if I remember correctly, it was about 35% saying slot machines, 35% saying card games, which could be anywhere, the casino, privately, card club. Approximately 15% saying pull tabs. I don't remember the rest of the percentages. I don't know, it's like 8 or 9% illegal sports bookmaking. Lottery was less than 1%. There was also smaller amounts for horse racing, bingo, etc. I'm reluctant to place too much emphasis on that, simply because the experience in other states has been that those percentages change to reflect what is available, that people with a gambling problem, if one form of gambling is denied to them, will seek another. They are equal opportunity employers.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, just one more comment regarding that question. Your question also reinforces the need for good research. We don't have a precise answer to that question.
All right. Anybody in the audience would like to speak for or against this bill? Anybody else have any questions? If not, can I move this thing? Okay, I move that House File 1977 be recommended to pass the Health and Human Services as amended. See no other Health and Human Services Finance as amended. Any other questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next bill up is Representative Biskins, 2011.
I'll talk to you.
I'll move 2011, and this one would go to the General Register. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, House File 2011 seeks to repeal the cap on the number of tables at a card club that's currently in statute. And here to explain why this is a good idea, I have sitting at the table with me Mr. Court Holton, who is General Counsel for the Horsemen's Association.
Welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself, as you know.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Court Holton, and I'm counsel to the Minnesota HBPA, which is a horsepersons organization representing the owners and trainers in Minnesota. This bill relates to the card club legislation that was authorized in 1999, and that was put into effect in June of 2000. When that bill was going through the legislature, there were many questions asked about it, and it was a controversial bill at the time. There were two items that were added to it, which we viewed as, I think the current terminology is micromanaging. We went along with the two items because we felt that after there was a few years of real-world experience, we could ask the legislature to revisit those two items. One had to do with dollar limits, and the other had to do with table limits. And after the card club was up and running fine without any problems, the legislature, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, addressed the wagering limit issue, and we're here today to ask the legislature to revisit the table limit issue. That table limit is 50 tables, and I think that if you go back to 1999 and that legislative session and the financial projections that were made, the industry was telling the legislature that given where we were at that time, the card club would be successful enough to keep the industry afloat and to prevent us from shutting down. And given the experience that we've had now since 2000, those projections were accurate. There was a outside expert hired. My organization did our own, and the based on the results in the real life experiment, it appears that we have done a good job of capturing the market that's out there. So the table limit issue that we're here on today does not so much address the issue of the attaining market share as it does servicing the market that we have. And the problem is this. The tournaments that have gotten popular and the peak times have caused problems with the consumers as they relate to a 50-table limit. When there's tournaments running, and tournaments have gotten very, very popular, there are at least three television shows now that are featuring Texas Hold'em tournaments, and they've gotten very popular. a little bit about tournaments. Unlike the regular tables, the people who are playing in the tournament are not actually gambling at the time, and so therefore the revenue source from those tables is very limited. They're involved in a contest. It works sort of like this. You pay an entry fee, let's say it's $20, and you'll get a stack of chips, and it doesn't matter how many you get. You could get $1 million worth of chips, but those chips are not worth anything. They're not cashable. They're just like points. They're points to show how you're doing in the contest. And at the end of the game, or the end of the contest, or the end of the tournament, whoever has the most chips or points is the winner. And what they win is not the $1 million. They win the stated prize for that tournament. If it was $1,000, you know, they would win $1,000. At any rate, during those times, there's a pinch off for other customers, and at certain peak times, we have several years of experience to show the legislature now. This has run very well. And in terms of the impact on the horse racing industry, and you may be wondering if this bill has to do with the Canterbury Card Club, how come the horse guy is up testifying instead of the track guy? Well, when you passed that law, it was primarily designed to benefit the horse guys, and we have been the primary beneficiary. The primary purpose was to put is to improve the industry by putting more money into purses, hoping that both the racing would improve, which has happened, and the outside industry would improve, which has happened. And as a side note, I think in your packets there's a new economic study from the University of Minnesota that shows the impact of this industry on the state. In 1998, a year before you passed this, we produced 140 thoroughbred foals. That was down from the better years where we had less competition, where we had 600 and 700 at times. One year we even reached 800. But in 1998 we had 140 thoroughbred foals. Last year that amount practically doubled to 274. So the plan has been working, and the operation has been both well run and successful. We're now here to try to persuade you that this other piece of regulation is no longer necessary. We are regulated by two separate government agencies, and to the extent that this regulation comes off, we can service the market that we have as needed. Now, even the 50 tables that are out there today, of course, are not always in play. Sometimes it could be half of that, but there are several times, most of which are the two that I mentioned, where there are many people waiting or who leave. And that is the marketplace that we've developed it. We'd like to service it in a more efficient manner, thus the bill. One last statistic. The Card Club has put in 1999, total purses were a little over $5 million. Last year, they were over $8 million. And Card Club revenues to the purses, we see going up by another $600,000 this year. This bill won't change those figures, perhaps a little bit, as we are better at serving our marketplace. But the purpose of my telling you that is that this legislative enactment worked exactly for the reasons that you voted for it, and exactly for the reasons that you were given when it was being lobbied. Thank you.
Okay. I would like to know, Go ahead, Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there are representatives here from Canterbury Park and from the Minnesota Racing Commission who has the regulatory oversight of the card club. If there are any questions for them, otherwise we stand for questions at this time.
We'll take questions from the committee, but I just want to know how many in the audience are going to want to testify either for or against this bill so we know what kind of time frame we're dealing with. Okay. Representative Kahn.
Chairman and Representative Biskins, it might be in this material that we have here, but I'm interested in the breakdown of how much money per day the card club makes, what goes to the horse, how much of that goes to the, not per day, but obviously amortized over the year, how much goes to the horses, and how much goes to the state? What kind of taxes do we have on this?
Representative Biskin.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, I'll let Mr. Holton deal with the taxes issue, but 14% of the gross revenue of the money goes to the horse racing purses, which is about 50% of the net profit goes to the purses. I don't have the dollar figure. Maybe somebody from Canterbury Park has it, but Mr. Chair, I'd like Mr. Holton to have the opportunity to talk about the taxes issue.
Mr. Holton?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, if you're referring to a gambling activities tax, an additional tax on this commercial activity. In 1999 and at no time since did the legislature impose an additional gambling activities tax on the card club activity. And the reason in 1999 was the purpose of that bill was to keep the track from shutting down again. And the decision, at least as I understood it, was that that there would be more to be gained by keeping the outside industry going, and more tax revenue would be raised that way, and zero tax revenue from either source would be raised if we went in the tank once again as we did in 1992. So I think the answer to your question is zero.
So there is no tax. There's no special tax on this. And I don't think I got the answer. I got some percentages, but I'd like to know how much money goes to the purses, how much money goes to the, and how much money goes to the owners.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, I can answer part of that. Maybe we'll get Randy up here to purses were enhanced by the card club. In the amounts of starting in 2000, $1.3 million, $2 million, $2.4 million, $3.1 million, and in the upcoming year, $3.7 million, and that was on top of a previous base of only $5 million. So that's part of the answer. I don't have the statistics for the rest of the year.
Okay, so, Mr. Chairman, if we said that the enhancement of the purse was about 50% of the net, so that means that the owners are then getting an extra $3 million now at 50. I'm just looking. For example, we just did something, which is always, and I'm sorry, I was at something else, so I didn't miss the discussion on it, but Representative Broad's bill, where we again took money from the lottery prize fund, which otherwise would go to the state, would go to environmental issues, and would go to the general fund for compulsive gambling. Now, all the testimony that I've had over the years that I've served on this committee is that the least source of compulsive gambling problems of everything that we have in the state is the lottery. And the answer of why we always take money from the lottery for compulsive gambling programs is because it's the Willie Sutton theory of why he robbed banks. It's because that's where the money is. But what I'm looking at, this, if there is a lot of money that's being generated from the card club and from the track, maybe the source of the funding, for example, of Representative Broad's bill should have been this, and maybe we should be getting some money into the general fund. We should be getting money into the positive purposes of for the state, not just the track and not just the owners, you know, if this is being successful and we want to make it even more successful. I don't understand why we shouldn't put a gambling tax on this.
Comment? Representative Ellis?
The other question is, why isn't some money coming from compulsive gambling from this source instead of just from the lottery?
Representative, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, I was just standing in the background during Representative Broad's presentation, but I believe that one of the testifiers mentioned was that they do get a sizable amount from Canterbury Park. But again, we have representatives from Canterbury Park who could speak to that issue if you'd like.
Well, maybe we should answer the question about how much that's the answer. What you want to know is how much you put into compulsive gambling. Does that?
Well, that's one of the questions. And then the other question is, you know, should we now that we've gone beyond the survival of the track, should we be looking at another gambling tax that picks up a chunk of, we're looking at an additional $6 million that kind of comes from the card club. Maybe there should be some tax of some size on that. And obviously, when we go to 100, it will be even more.
Right.
Or we remove the limit, whatever it is.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, Randy Sampson. I'm the president and CEO of Canterbury Park, Representative Kahn. As to the first question related to problem gambling, as was stated by the Alliance folks, we were one of the original members, paid dues. We have made voluntary contributions. I believe that last year, the contribution that Canterbury made to that specific organization was $15,000. It was, you know, there is no tax. It was a voluntary contribution to assist the good work that they're doing. We have made a contribution, our dues of $5,000 for this year, and are working on a larger grant proposal. So we have assisted, but again, it's on a voluntary basis. There's nothing that is statutorily or otherwise dedicated from any of the revenues from Canterbury. And the other question related to what Canterbury makes out of the card club, an issue that we do review with the Racing Commission. Part of the law requires that we present financial statements to the Racing Commission as to how the card club is doing, so there is an ability to get that. Obviously, when you're doing that, there's all kinds of accounting issues of how you allocate overhead and other things, but generally the number that you suggested, the number that Representative Biskins mentioned, is that generally the last year the card club in total revenues did about $20 million, and roughly 15% of that, or 14%, went to the horsemen, which was roughly $3 million, and in general terms, our profit, so to speak, was roughly in that same neighborhood of $3 million. Now, again, we had to make a significant investment, and we have expenses, and we are. It has been very helpful in being able to do projects to enhance racing. We're working on a number of things for upgrading our grandstand area for live racing and other things, so it's to some degree that money is being used to put back into running a longer race meet, doing other things to help put on the racing. But clearly the answer to your question is that there has been some profit to Canterbury, has been very helpful in our business, and you know, as to the tax, that's certainly an issue for the legislature.
Okay, Representative Kahn, then we want to move on.
Just one final one. What, you know, we had a tax. I don't remember what the tax was. Court even. Well, we had a tax, and we decided this was something that we ought to have a special tax on. We removed it because we wanted to make sure that the, and I think I support, I think I always voted for the card club bills. We removed the tax because we wanted to make sure that this would be economically viable. It looks like it's economically viable. Is there any reason? It sounds to me, I don't know what level tax we had, but I can't believe that was much of a factor in whether it's economically viable or not at the levels we're talking about. Is there any reason why we shouldn't put that tax back on, and when we shouldn't just look at that previous tax that we had and put it on, and I don't remember what it was, but why, you probably know more about the history than I do, and why it was put on and why it was taken, and you said why it was taken off.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Khan, I drafted that legislation in 1999. Basically, it was in 1997. That particular piece never had a GATT tax on it. We did, before that, make adjustments to the parimutuel tax. And in our private conversations, you know, we have always wondered and anticipated that at some level of success, the legislature will revisit this issue as well. Now, where we're at now, I think that we're, you know, a long ways away from there. I don't want to talk about the other bill that we have in the Senate that generates a lot of tax money, but in terms of this one, we're still in the phase where, for instance, the racetrack has gone from, I think, like no reserve. There was a time where a hiccup there would have put us all under the table. I believe they have established reserves. Now they've done capital improvements. We have a new water training system being built where horses can train in water, which has various benefits to horse training. That's coming out of Canterbury's Hide. It doesn't do anything to their bottom line. So there, it's a little bit more complex than the $5 or $6 million, but we know that this will get revisited at some time.
Where's MCON?
If we were to revisit it, would it make sense to just reinstall the parimutuel tax? Would it make more sense to look at this part of the business and put a tax on this part of the business? Does it all end up together in the long run?
Mr. Chairman, I obviously it would make a difference as to what rates were being discussed. I think that the
I'm just talking about
the recapture was probably easiest in this activity because the other activity is so incredibly complicated now with the technology we have and the interaction all across the United States with other racetracks, and there's like 7-8 different ways you can make wagers. My guess is that on this side it would be at least easiest to administer.
Okay, quickly.
Well, we certainly want to do it in the way that's the most convenient, the easiest way to administer. So we'll certainly take that advice into consideration.
Representative
I don't have an amendment here.
Representative Ellison.
Mr. Chair, is it true, either Representative Biskins or even testified, that that Canterbury has a Racino bill that is before the legislature at this time?
Representative Biskins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Ellison, the legislature obviously implies either the House or the Senate, and the Racino bill that passed the House last year is over in committee in the Senate, yes. Was there another Racino bill that was introduced by myself? Yes, there was. In fact, for a brief amount of time, it was on our schedule to be heard in this committee. I've asked for that bill to be set aside at this time, so I'm not moving forward at this time with any Racino legislation.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
yeah.
Would the request for no limit on car payers, if this were to pass, would you accept it in lieu of the Racino? Or would you be continue to pursue both?
That's interesting. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Ellison, I believe that as much influence as a member of the House of Representatives has over in the quote-unquote higher body, all right, is about as much influence as I have on pursuing the Racino legislation that's currently out there. So my focus right now is on what I can do in the body that I sit on, and I'm focusing on this piece of legislation.
Representative, go ahead, quickly. I got Representative Seifert's up.
Would it be fair to say then that you're not giving up on the Racino, but you're focusing on this. And if you get both good, and if you get one good, does that capture your position on that issue?
Representative Biskin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ellison, I think as I stated last year when I testified before this committee, I think the Canterbury Park has been a real jewel of entertainment in the state of Minnesota. Certainly it's been wonderful for my legislative district and Scott County. I think it is well run. It is family oriented. The horse racing is absolutely fabulous. If any members of the committee have had a chance to see Seabiscuit, please do. It's an awesome movie. What we can do to help this industry not only helps Canterbury Park but also helps the agricultural industry. I hope all members of the committee have had a chance to look at. I've had a chance, and Representative Ellison, I hope you also have had a chance to look at the University of Minnesota's study. They haven't a dog in this fight, and yet the recommendations they come up with would support either of these pieces of legislation. And so, to capture my opinion, I like to see my bills get passed. I don't know, maybe it's an ego thing.
Okay, just to keep everybody on the keel, we have one more bill, so be very briefly and briefly with your answers, yes. Representative Ellison.
All right, quickly. Mr. Chair. I know I'm going to need a follow-up, Mr. Chair, but I'll ask my question. Could you share with us what the per table per day net receipts are at this point in the current year?
Mr. Sampson, I think that was Representative Kahn's question.
Well, he wants it divided out further.
Oh, okay.
So I got it so that we have to do the division.
Okay.
It's
about 101,000, isn't it? Calculated out.
Mr. Chair and Representative Ellison, I would be, to try to do that mentally, I don't have a calculator, I would be guessing. I can tell you that on a per day, we have 50 tables. On a per day basis, when we opened the card club, we were doing in the 45 to 50,000 per day average revenue from the card playing activities. That has now increased partly again, as Mr. Holton mentioned, the popularity of poker through the TV shows and that kind of thing. The business has built to where I believe that now an accurate figure would be in the 60 to 70,000. Per day of gross revenue that is created at the card club.
Okay.
You could get, it was roughly slightly over $20 million last year total revenue. You could divide that by 365 days, and that would give you a per day from last year. But
go ahead.
Given this proposal, it will simply take any limit off card tables, so you could get as many as you could get in the room, and you could build another room. How many extra tables do you anticipate adding?
Mr. Sampson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ellison, that is a good question. During our peak times, as Mr. Holton mentioned, Friday night, we can have people that have an hour to 2 hour wait to get on a table. But there are really, in the poker room, there's only about 250 seats. So if you have 40 or 50 people on the list, and the tables don't turn over like they do at a restaurant every hour, people play for a length of time. So with 40 or 50 people on the list at that time to get in a game, that would be about 8 more tables, or somewhere between 5 and 10 tables would accommodate that. In addition, when we do our larger tournaments, we do end up turning away at times 100 people that would like to get into the tournament because we don't have enough tables. That would tell you that maybe 20 tables at our peak times during tournaments. So somewhere in that range, 20, maybe as many as the most. We do a tournament every year where the law allows us to go beyond the 50 tables for one 2 week period. Last year, this past fall, we had an additional 13 tables that were set up in a separate area to accommodate that. So, no, there's actually for the Hold'em tournaments, you generally have 9 per table. You can put as many as 10 if you really want to jam them in there, but it's typically 9 per table.
Okay.
So somewhere in the 20 table range would be what we think could be useful during our peak times.
Representative Seifert, briefly.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I'm just... it strikes me, because when Representative Kahn had asked about the taxation issue, I
didn't ask Representative Bisgins about this beforehand, but I'm just astounded that, you know, 3 years down the line, we could have hundreds and hundreds of tables, and we're not going to get any. You know, the big knock on the Indian casinos is we don't get any taxes out of them, and now we're going to go down the road and say we're not going to get taxes out of this either. And I think I thought Oscott maybe carried the bill. I thought I voted for the card club before. Like Representative Kahn, we didn't want the thing to fall on its face back in the late 90s, but now that we're getting into kind of the lucrative amount of money, some of the attractiveness of some of the other bills that are before this committee, Haas, Hackbarth, Boudreaux, Bisgins, and others, is that the state will gain some money out of taxing this stuff. So, you know, I'm not saying I'm against your bill per se, but if we're going to get beyond the survival of Canterbury issue, you know, I'm not real sure that I'm comfortable, okay. And I'm not Mr. Liberal Taxer, but jeepers, I mean, if, well, you know, I just feel like, you know, maybe these other proposals are attractive to a lot of legislators because they offer some money for the state for good things. And I'm just wondering, you know, I don't have a proposal, I don't have an amendment, I don't know what the tax would be, but I just think if you're going to get into the point of, you know, maybe next year you're only going to have 60 to 70 tables, but the year after that you'll have more and more and more, you know, I just think some of these other proposals are attractive because the money they raise, you know, I'm okay doing this, but I just think it would be nice to get some money out of it, too.
To that point, and remember we have another bill up and it's
okay.
Mine.
I know. Where was the motion to send this bill?
The General Register.
Well, my suggestion is that we send it to, so that it will have made all the deadlines by getting by here, we either send it to state government finance or we send it to taxes and work on an amendment, which would then I'll go to town. I'm not prepared to do an amendment now, and I don't like doing appropriation tax policy on the floor, but why don't we send it to taxes and let them decide whether they don't want to do it or whether they do want to do it.
Okay, if you want, if you go that route, Representative Hilty had a question, and because I assume your motion would be to change my motion.
Well, Hess made a case. I wouldn't mind, you know, if you want to look at the now economics, we could do something in state government finance, and then, you know, I would like to add a tax that would seem reasonable that was compared to the, you know, remember, this isn't a new tax. This is doing something in replacement of an old tax we ought to have. If you're willing to have us deal with it there for an amendment, that would be fine. Otherwise, I think we should just tend it to taxes with the recommendation that they look at it. That they, you know, my recommendation would be to pass, but that they also look at the tax consequences and decide to do it.
Can we get to Representative Hilty's quick question, and then Representative Nava can make, I think you want a question there, so quickly.
And Mr.
We'll get back to your thing in a minute.
Mr. Halton, or maybe Mr. Sampson, if I understood Mr. Halton's testimony correctly, his emphasis was on the problem of a lack of space during tournaments. If that's the major problem, why wouldn't we want to just give you the exception for a greater number of tournaments per year? And likewise, if that's not the only problem, and there's also a slight problem on some occasions with the number of tables available at peak periods, why don't we just give you 10 more? You know, when we considered this proposal in the first place, we did have assurance that this would be all it took. We would not be back here asking for anything. Certainly, we would not be back asking for a casino at Canterbury Park. But we have heard that proposal. It's still on the table. And now we're being asked to just open this wide up on the assumption that it's really only a small problem that this would deal with, and it would only be amount to just a little bit of an addition. Well, if that's true, then why don't we just specify that? And then I would be willing to support that.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Bisgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hilty. The reason I brought this bill forward and the reason it's drafted the way it is because I believe that the 50-table limit is governmental micromanagement. I don't know why we in statute would micromanage. I understand why we did at the beginning, before the card club was ever a reality in the state of Minnesota, so that we could make sure it was well-run and indeed we could make sure that it did what we thought it would do, which is to help Canterbury Park and its subsidiary effects on our agricultural industry. So we wanted to make sure, so we put a 50-table limit. Now the limit looks like simply governmental micromanagement. The limit should be in this enterprise as it is in most others. What does the marketplace demand? You know, I heard talk about building a brand new building or adding another room or 200-300 tables. Well, the reality is Canterbury Park isn't going to be building and putting out tables that are sitting empty. Right? You've heard what the testimony is on what the need would be, and it should fluctuate to what the citizens of the state of Minnesota desire. And an artificial cap, the reason I wouldn't support that is because that is an artificial cap. If I can add one other thing, and this is Representative Kahn and Representative Seifert's proposals. You know, this bill is a policy bill. That's what I tried to put forth here, is a policy bill. Now, if there is an issue with putting gambling on the card clubs, I contend that that's another bill. I think there's time. Have the bill drafted. When it's drafted and put in the hopper and it's a tax bill, it'll get sent to the tax committee where the tax committee will then consider it. I just prefer this bill continue to stay a policy bill and be referred to the general register.
All right. Representative Kahn. Representative Hilty, go ahead.
Well, Representative Biskins, there are actually two markets that we're considering here. One is for horse racing, one is for playing cards. This would not have passed in the first place if it had been about having a card club. The only reason this passed in the first place is because it was sold as beneficial to the horse racing industry and horse agriculture in the state, which you're still trying to do. Okay, that is a market that is clearly limited. It was a market that, if we had followed your principle of just letting the free market dictate, wouldn't be here in the first place. You needed something else to prop it up. The horse racing part of this business is clearly limited. What may not be limited is the card club. And I can't buy your argument that this is just a free market proposal, because if it is, then let's just separate it.
Representative Biskins,
let's talk about a card club on the one hand and horse racing on the other and see how the free market responds to those.
We're running out of time. Representative Biskins, a quick reply, and then Representative Kahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hilty, I appreciate your point of view.
Thank you very much. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd make the motion. I think the finances of this need some further discussion, and I think if it goes to a finance committee, that further discussion should be totally separate bills. I don't think it delays it to do that, and so I would amend the motion to pass and to send it to taxes.
The tax committee.
Yes, I think that's a perfectly reasonable, or Ways and Means if Knobloch wants it. I just think some finance committee ought to look at the finances.
Make a decision where we're going here.
I'll send it to anyone.
Representative Knobloch.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
I don't agree with the comment that was made that this should just be a separate policy bill. We never do that with stuff that has financial implications. We always package them together and make sure we do them at the same time.
Representative Knobloch.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there's nothing in the bill as it is right now that requires it to go to a finance committee, and so I guess I think it should go to the floor unless there is an amendment that we put on it that would make it appropriate to go to some finance committee.
All right. Well, but you have a motion up. Representative
Kahn
moved
motion.
To
I'll,
go to...
I'll do an amendment then.
We're running out of time here, so I want your motion to be up. You're moving the House File 2011 be recommended pass to what committee?
Taxes.
All in favor of the Kahn Amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, that doesn't make it. I'll renew my motion to House File 2011 be recommended to pass and go to the floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
I believe it passes.
Division.
Division's been called. All in favor, raise your hands. Nine. And all against? Six. And I might add that Representative Solberg is not voting because he still has a business interest with Canterbury. He's not in the committee, but technically this is not electronic voting, so the record should show that he is not voting either way, because he has a conflict of interest there, as his request, by the way. Okay, the bill does, motion prevails, the bill moves on to the floor, and I guess we're going to have to lay mine over now, unless you want to hear it in about a minute and a half, and I don't know if you feel like doing it. So at this, do you want to?
Yeah.
This is a bill that we passed before. It's up to the committee. You want to hear it quickly?
Yeah,
we know.
It was on the floor. It passed the floor. We got to redo the thing again. But if you want to hear it, we can do it very briefly. It's the same bill. Representative Lippman, can you chair the meeting?
I can.
Oh, okay. I saw it has a high number.
Mr. Chair, I just make an announcement.
Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the State Government Finance Committee, if we're going to have to start a meeting at 2:30, so if you would just go up and check in right away so we have a quorum to start, and then if you have to run and get a folder or pop or something, then you can do that and then come back. Then we can keep the meeting going. So we have a large agenda today. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members, I would move House File 2520, and it has to go to State Government Finance. This is what we talked about last year, Representative Newman, in case you don't know. Right now, you can't do this, but if under charitable gain, if this bill passes, the charities are going to make a lot of money. The state gets a chunk of money, and I have King Wilson to give you a brief explanation of what it's all about. And this is a bill that we passed last year, and you may want to talk about the difference between this and last year, whatever. Right? Okay. So,
Mr. Chair, committee members, King Wilson, Executive Director of Allied Charities. The bill that this committee last year passed was a little bit different. We got to Chairman Haas's committee and came out with some new language that did end up in the bill that the state government finance bill went to conference committee. Because the new language is improved, our friends on the other side wanted to see the new language in a new bill, so that's what's here before you. It's a simple bill that takes an existing form of charitable gambling, tip cords, and allows the outcome of a professional sports game to produce a winner. The simplest form basically is 100 numbers, 0 through 9. You get your numbers, you've got 2 and 7, the final score is 12 to 7, you win. It works through the charitable gambling realm so that this will be going on in your VFWs, your Legions, your Elks, your Moose. Also, it would be within the bars that do charitable gambling. This bill is jointly co-sponsored with Allied Charities, with the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association. It's a bill that would generate approximately $11 million in taxes that these nonprofit tax exempts do pay. We do pay gambling taxes. There would be additional fees with what came through last year. I think the tax dollars is probably a little low because it was based on one of the taxes, not the combined receipts tax. There would be probably another $50 to $60 million that charitable gambling organizations would have to donate back to their communities for the various things they do. Again, it passed overwhelmingly last year in the House, and we'd like that opportunity again.
That's Mr. Chairman. A necessary member questions. Representative Kahn.
What happens with this bill and the thing that we've been wrestling with for years, the federal prohibition of sports?
That's right. We forgot to touch on this a little.
Mr. Wilson.
Federal issue here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, you are right. I neglected to mention that. There is a federal question, and there are some that think it's a prohibition, some that think it's a question. The only way we can answer the question is to have this legislature pass it, have the governor sign it, have an organization do it, and find out what the feds do. The federal prohibition, or wherever the question exists, is a federal law that allows sports betting in only 6 states, and there are many folks, I believe, including Representative Kahn, that doesn't think that's fair. she'd rather go to sports bookmaking, I think, where we're we're sticking to sports tip boards. But that question is there, and we would like the opportunity to ask the question. I think there's some other precedents in our government. I think Governor Plenty's website for buying drugs is running on the edge, and we'd like to have the same opportunity to skate along with the governor and see if we can make some change at the federal level, which
and
is needed.
And you all get to go to jail with
said,
them.
Couldn't have said it better myself. we'll be looking at an amendment in state government finance.
On this one?
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn has got to abstain from voting on this because of conflict of interest.
Further necessary member comment.
Representative Kahn. Never even made a sports bet.
Other members? If not, Chairman Rhodes renews his motion. Forgive me, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify either for or against House File 2520?
Nope.
Seeing none. Then Chairman Rhodes renews his motion that House File 2520 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay.
Nay.
The motion does prevail. Without any further business before the committee, did we do a minute? We are adjourned.